Case number 13-7015, 3D Global Solutions, Inc., appellant versus MVM, Inc. Mr. Farage for the appellant, Mr. Rosenblum for the appellate.
Good morning, Your Honors. This is my first time arguing, so I may be a little bit nervous, and I hope you'll bear with me if I trip over my words. After 6 years of waiting for trial, 3D Global Solutions and MVM went to trial. 3D prevailed, recovered about $138,000 in damages for a breach of contract claim. The jury returned a verdict against MVM's claim of about $2 million. The case was tried by in front of a jury presided over by the Honorable Judge Kessler in this building. On September 17 of 2012, after the evidence was closed during a charging conference, I, representing 3D, asked Judge Kessler to instruct the jury on prejudgment interest. When you look at the transcript, you will find that I say judgment interest. However, earlier in the day, I sent an email to Judge Kessler's clerk specifically citing prejudgment interest and handed that, and the email included the case, Occoquan, from Virginia. We were working under Virginia law.
Is that email in the record?
It is, Your Honor. It is at, it's in the supplemental joint appendix.
Filed on the record of the district court.
It is, and it's in the supplemental appendix.
It's in the printed pages. It's page 25. On the computer pages, it's page 25 out of 28. It's about the fourth or fifth from the end, I think.
That sounds right. Also in court, the same case was presented to counsel for MVM. The discussions throughout.
But that case says that requires a jury finding, right?
It does.
And at the time when you raise this with the court and the court said, no, I'm going to decide this myself, you didn't say, but you can't, Your Honor, this is a matter for the fact finder.
I did not. And at the time, I want to address one quick issue here. MVM, in their response, raises an issue of post-judgment interest. I think we can all agree, federal statutes, Virginia cases, Virginia statutes, basically make post-judgment interest non-discretionary. You get it. You don't have to instruct the jury on it. It's just there. It's not even an issue for the jury to decide because it's not a controversy at the time the jury is instructed. So clearly we're talking about prejudgment interest. We get down to the issue that Your Honor, Judge Garland raised. Why did I not challenge the suggestion by Judge Kessler? And it's simply, the case was presented to allow the judge to understand that it is within her discretion, which is also federal statute, and to present that it's 6%. That's what we were dealing with because that was not alleged in the complaint, although the complaint did allege and request interest. At the time Judge Kessler makes the suggestion, without hearing anything to an objection or a response from counsel for MVM, I did not think that would be a problem because the parties could certainly agree, and Ellett v. Johnson out of Virginia clearly states that the parties can agree to such the judge making that decision. Now, where there is some disagreement, and of course, if you've read the order from Judge Kessler.
You're saying that a case says that the parties can agree that instead of having the jury make the determination that they can agree that the judge can make the determination in a jury trial about prejudgment interest? Is that what you're saying that case stands for?
The case stands for a proposition that parties cannot fail to object or stand silent and then raise an objection afterwards and say, it's not about specifically that issue, that the court may not then determine what the parties failed to object to or remain silent about during the discussion.
Well, you made a request of Judge Kessler. You said, I'd like a jury instruction, and let's just assume you said explicitly on prejudgment interest. Here's a case. She says, why does the jury have to deal with this? Why can't I deal with this after the verdicts? And you say, I agree. At that point, if there's an error, haven't you invited the error by agreeing with that erroneous ruling?
That is one reading, Your Honor, and I can see how we could arrive at that. But the another just as reasonable alternative is, because it's a math problem in the end, and if the other party does not agree, and keep in mind, MVM stood to gain $600,000 in interest had they prevailed. I had not won at that time. I mean, by saying the judge could do it, we were agreeing that as a matter of principle, after 6 years for both parties waiting for to be made whole, prejudgment interest as a matter of course, as a matter of principle, might be awarded to make the parties whole. MVM did not object because, and this is, I'm arguing to you, they stood to gain if they prevailed on a $2 million.
They're not here objecting now. You didn't object either at that point. You said, I agree.
I did.
So why is their silence changed what Judge Wilkins asked you about? Why isn't this an invited error if it's there?
I think I could, I would be more agreeable to the invited error if only 3D stood to gain from the decision by the judge. Both parties.
I'm not quite sure why that doesn't cut against you.
I'm sorry?
I'm not sure why that doesn't cut against your position rather than in favor of it. The fact that they didn't object either makes it look even more like an agreement, like an invitation to the judge to proceed, doesn't it?
The fact that they didn't object makes it more
likely. You brought it up. Why does that make it any? Why does that change the facts that Judge Wilkins was asking you?
I brought up the request for an instruction. The judge says, "Why do I burden the jury with this? Because we're talking about 6% on a an amount certain at the end of this trial." And I said, "I agree."
Yeah.
And MVM failed to object.
Well, so what? Why does that change anything that Judge Wilkins asked you about? The fact that they didn't object either. How does that help your case?
It helps my case because, as Ellett v. Johnson state, the party cannot stand silent and then claim that it was that
they're not doing that. You are.
Let me. Well, I don't want to interrupt. My question to you is there any authority for the proposition that under Virginia law, where there's a jury trial on the merits of the claim, that the parties can agree to have the judge decide prejudgment interest?
I think the closest case under Virginia law, Your Honor, is Ellett v. Johnson at 372 Southeast 2nd 153. And it stands for the proposition that a party may not object to a trial court's determination of prejudgment interest once it has agreed or failed to object to the court determining the issue of prejudgment interest. Now, that was I believe that was a judge-alone trial.
It was a bench trial.
Bench trial. And I read that case to suggest that, well, the simple answer to your question, I did not find any authority that mirrors the facts that we're working under. But there is nothing to suggest that that can't be done either. There's nothing either way. But Johnson.
So am I understanding your argument to be that at the time you made the request for the instruction, and at the time Judge Kessler says, why can't I just decide that, you thought that if both parties agreed to that, then the judge could decide it based on this case that you're talking about.
I was under that impression. And to be completely frank with you, I think parties could agree to have the court determine certain matters not left to the jury, and I don't want to get...
Then why didn't you get their express agreement to proceed in that fashion at that point?
By remaining silent, I assume that the lack of objection led me to believe that that was an agreement. So I did not have an express agreement. We were standing in court side by side, and when Mr. Rosenblum did not respond with an objection, I thought he was consenting. I see my time's expired, at least the first portion, so I'll reserve the rest.
Well, actually, the whole portion. But,
oh, it is. Okay.
But we may give you some time at the end.
Thank you, sir.
That's all right.
Good morning, Your Honor. It's Herbert Rosenblum for the defendant, MVM. I want to point out to the court that the section of the law is very, very clear. 8.01-382 says, in essence, the verdict of a jury may, and only may provide for interest on any principal sum awarded.
You think the parties couldn't agree to submit the issue to a bench trial instead of to a jury?
Well, Judge, there was no agreement.
That, of course, wasn't the question. The question is, if there were an agreement, isn't it the case that on this issue, like pretty much any issue, including a criminal's case, guilt or innocence, can be submitted to the bench?
I agree that it could have been. However, then I think the court would need to make findings of fact, mm-hmm. because it's discretionary. It's discretionary not only as to the interest rate.
I understand that, but so your real argument is that you didn't agree to this.
That's correct. Okay. And Judge, I want to point out that after the verdict, when this was came up and counsel asked for prejudgment interest, the jury was back in the jury room.
Hadn't
they been discharged?
I don't think they had been discharged.
You know, you could have found that out. It's been a long time since this, and there's been a briefing schedule, an argument schedule, and you come and tell us now you don't think they've been discharged.
Judge, the court didn't use the word discharge. She put them back in the room, okay. And she said, is there anything else? Okay. At least counsel could have asked. Now, I'm not saying the court had the authority or I would have agreed, but at least could have asked that they be brought back or given instructions about interest.
Well, way back when counsel said to the court, I agree, when the court filed something bad men to the court, you didn't say anything at all. You did, as my counsel said, you stood silent. And
Judge, the word prejudgment interest was not used in that discussion at the bench.
It had to be concerning prejudgment interest. You knew that post-judgment interest couldn't be presented to a jury.
Judge, he did not use prejudgment interest. And
are you trying to tell the court that you could have understood that to mean post-judgment interest? No way that could be committed to a jury. It had to be prejudgment interest.
Judge, he did not use prejudgment interest.
I think you've established that. Now, how about listening to my question?
Yes, sir.
Didn't you understand it to mean prejudgment? Wasn't that the only reasonable understanding?
All I know is, John, he did not ask for...
Yeah, okay, I don't think I'm going to get an answer, so go ahead.
Your Honors, one of the things that I want to point out to the court is that in any trial, attorneys make tactical decisions whether to ask for certain damages or not. And it is true, we did not ask for interest. We made that tactical decision. And attorneys every day decide not to put on certain evidence of certain damages because they don't feel that it's worthwhile to present. And I suggest to the court that that's exactly what we did in not requesting interest on our claim against 3D. Reading the case that counsel cites, it's obvious that it is an issue for the trier of the fact, because there are certain things that the trier of fact has to determine, and that is the amount of interest, when it should start, and on what principle or what judgment it should start. It could start at the time of the breach, or it could start the day before the entry of the judgment.
Why shouldn't we accept the appellant's argument that the court was basically offering to resolve that instead of the jury, and he agreed, and that by your failing to object, that should be construed as an agreement as well?
Because in order to have an agreement, you've got to have a meeting of the minds. You've got to have an agreement. The court found that our conversation at the bench was not an agreement. Judge Kessler found that.
Where's that in the record?
That's in her opinion.
In her ruling.
In her ruling, yes, sir. And she was the one who was present. And she was the one who heard the argument. And from reading her opinion, she was not under the impression that counsel was asking for prejudgment interest. That he was only asking for interest after. And that's what is in her room. Yeah,
So on the one hand, you're arguing that you made a tactical judgment not to ask for prejudgment interest. But on the other hand, when he said, what about a jury instruction on interest, you had no idea what kind of interest he was talking about.
That's correct, John. He did not even argue to the jury.
How can both of those things be true? If you were so focused on prejudgment interest that you made a tactical decision to not ask for it and not to put on any evidence about it, to not argue about it,
Judge,
when he brings it up, how is it also true that you didn't know what he was talking about?
Judge, I made that decision early in the trial.
So you forgot about prejudgment interest by the end of the trial?
I did not make it at the end. I did not argue interest to the jury, neither did Mr. Farage. It was not mentioned to the jury. It was not mentioned what they needed to consider.
And that was because the judge said that the judge was going to decide it. Isn't that right?
Well, I don't think she said it was decided.
Didn't she say, why should that be included in instruction? Why wouldn't that simply be after the verdict? The less the jury has to focus on, the easier the task will be. Sounds like she's saying she doesn't want to put this before the jury.
And then the counsel says, I agree.
Mr. Farage says, I agree.
Yeah. And you said nothing.
I said nothing.
Any further questions?
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Well, give Mr. Farage another 2 minutes.
Thank you very much, Your Honor. I'll be brief.
Before you start, I just want to see if I can keep in mind sort of what our standard of review is here is in the relationship to what your theory is. Is your theory that the district court abused its discretion in rejecting the suggestion that it be submitted to the jury in the first place?
That would be de novo.
Well, do you think, given that your agreement not to put it before the jury, it couldn't have been an abuse of discretion, de novo or anything else, right?
If I were to concede Judge Wilkins' suggestion that I invited error.
Not invited error. If we take your position that you were talking about prejudgment interest.
Yes, sir.
And if we understand the district court is saying, no, the jury can do it. That was her view at the time. And you said, I agree. Right?
Yes, sir.
So that can't have been, you've waived whatever right at that point, haven't you?
based
to present it to the jury.
And relying on the judge's suggestion that she could do it, yes.
Yeah, well, and after all, you're the lawyer there. You could have told her that she couldn't if you didn't want that. So
yes.
So then your argument is that the court having said that it could do it and then declining to do so when she realized that it's supposed to be a jury question, that's an abuse of discretion? Is that your argument?
I think it would be an abuse of discretion bordering on de novo, because I asked for the instruction and based my follow-on agreement in reliance on the judge's position that she could do it instead of burdening the jury with it. We were dealing with really a very simple issue. It's 6% interest on a sum certain, and so either prevailing party, it becomes an arithmetic problem.
So, but I mean, there's the question that the judge abused its discretion, her discretion later in concluding that it should have gone to the jury, and because it didn't.
Yes.
That's your argument.
Yes.
Now, what about your argument that he agreed? The judge found that he did not agree. Is that a question of fact that we review for clear error? The judge did find that. He's correct, right? Basically the first line of her.
But that betrays her earlier, and that, yes. So
what's our standard of review? Is that clear error then?
I think it is clear error.
Okay, I'm sorry to interrupt. I'll give you some extra time.
At page 176 of the joint appendix, when we come back on the record at the bottom of the page, line 20, Mr. Rosenblum states, Judge, I think the court may enter. It does not have to. It is not mandatory. It is not compulsory that there be prejudgment interest. At that point, we're all in agreement that we're talking about prejudgment interest. There's no dispute. And the fact that MVM lost then leads Mr. Rosenblum to say, well, it's not mandatory. It is discretionary. That is absolutely true. But we had already agreed beforehand that she would make the decision.
Sorry, can you tell me what, just say again what page that was on?
Joint appendix at page 176, Your Honor, at page 20.
But that's a different hearing, right? It's not the, that's a second hearing? That's a later hearing?
No, that's the same
September
one.
17th hearing?
Yes.
No, that's September 20th.
Yeah. Well, that's after the jury comes back.
Yes, but the one we were talking about before was the September 17th.
Yes.
Before.
So after the jury comes back and now the decision is 4-3-D, The agreement clear from within the four corners of the transcript is it's we're talking about prejudgment interest, and then the appeal is, please, Judge, don't grant it to him because it's not mandatory, it's discretionary, which is true, but we'd already agreed for the judge to do that.
One question that I should know the answer to, but don't. Did you tender an instruction on prejudgment interest?
I don't recall anymore, Judge. Mr. Rosenblum and I worked extensively on instructions. We went back and forth. I think we did do that. The judge sort of destroyed everything we did.
I saw one in the record.
No, I think we both worked on those instructions, but in the end, the judge says, I'm going to take care of this because you guys have too many. Thank you, Your Honor. I have nothing further. I appreciate
the matter under submission. Thank you.